Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. It's October 27th, 2021. Let's check and see what's on the docket. First, Alec Murdoch. Boy, whole lot of talk about money. Alec Baldwin, have you got a lawyer yet? Yep, and well, there's a lot of talk about money. Kyle Rittenhouse has some final pre-trial motions resolved by the court for that trial beginning in early November, and a TikTok star has been arrested. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where a practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the procedure, and the law in regards to cold cases and current true crime cases. Welcome to the show. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, hit that bell so you receive notifications of when we go live. And as always, leave me a comment. Now, if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us and download it on any of your favorite podcasts. Just simply search Crime Talk with Scott Reich. All right, it's October 27th, 2021. Let's get to the docket. Before we get to the docket, a quick word for the people that sponsor the program and make sure that Crime Talk remains. First, go to crimetalkprep.com. Claim your 3 months of an emergency food kit. Now, in today's world, I think we all know a lot of shortages, and it doesn't seem to be getting a whole lot better. Now, bottom line is, if you go to crimetalkprep.com, you can claim a 3 month supply of emergency food kit. You put it in storage, it lasts forever, and you literally have it there for an emergency, right? What's an emergency? Something you don't expect is gonna happen. So when you do that, your order, you'll get $100 off the 3 month best-selling emergency food kit. Now, if you can't do the 3 months, you can do whatever you need, but have something there for the emergency. You'll be happy you did. All right, on to the docket. Today is Wednesday, October 27th, 2021. Let's get to the Alec Murdoch stuff because, well, let's just say we've talked about it in the 12 Undeniable Truths of Life about from a criminal defense attorney. That's right. It's always about the money. Next couple of stories, a lot of talk about the money. First, attorneys in three different civil lawsuits against Alec Murdoch want a court to have an independent representative take control of Murdoch's money and any other assets. The court motions in this case filed last week basically claim that they fear Murdoch is trying to hide millions of dollars that they could possibly collect in their lawsuits by shifting money between unknown accounts and potentially selling off property and a boat after he turned all of his affairs over to his surviving son, Buster Murdoch. Now, the similar motion in the three lawsuits includes several documents. One is a photo of Buster Murdoch that lawyer said was taken in October at a Las Vegas casino, a nearly $1 million mortgage the property owner paid off to Alec Murdoch, an online listing asking $114,000 for Murdoch's boat, and a nearly two-year-old unpaid tax bill that could lead to the auction of Murdoch's beach home in Edisto Island. Now, Murdoch's attorneys have not responded to the request to have the lawyers review and catalog all of Murdoch's assets, bank accounts, insurance policies, and expenditures, and basically an approval of his spending. Alec Murdoch has engaged in repeated dishonesty, according to the motions, which include deception and fraud. He has shown that he will go to extraordinary lengths to misappropriate, steal, transfer, or otherwise dispose of money in a manner that benefits him or his family with complete disregard for the interest of third persons, the lawyers wrote in their motions. Sounds pretty accurate so far. Now, while the power of attorneys may have some legitimate purposes for someone unable to manage their own finances, the power of attorney also provides a mechanism for Buster Murdoch to transfer, sell, or otherwise handle all Alec Murdoch's assets in a manner that diverts the assets, according to the motion. Now, in addition to the investigations in the stolen insurance money and insurance fraud case, state police continue to investigate the shooting deaths, millions of dollars missing from Murdoch's former law firm, a 2015 hit and run death, and whether Murdoch and his family obstructed the investigation into the boat crash, which was responsible for the death of Miss Mallory Beach. On Friday, October 29th, Judge Daniel Hall will hear motions filed by Mark Tinsley, who is representing Mallory Beach's family, Eric Bland, the attorney who found a paper trail of evidence showing how Murdoch allegedly stole $3.6 million from Gloria Satterfield's grieving family, and Joe McCulloch, who is suing the Murdochs on behalf of boat crash survivor Connor Cook. The first filed motion is to freeze Alex Murdoch's assets. In the motion, Tinsley asks the court to appoint two outside parties. One is an attorney, John T. Lay Jr., and former U.S. attorney Peter M. McCoy Jr., to have control over Alex and Buster Murdoch's assets, which is known as a receivership. This would give Lay and McCoy broad power to not only lock up Alex and Buster Murdoch's assets, but to sue for the recovery of the assets as well. So what that would mean is if monies were paid to anybody, the attorneys, the receiver, could then sue them to claw the money back. It's a thing. It happens. Nobody's entitled to ill-gotten gains, even if they didn't know about it. So the attorneys for the estate of Gloria Satterfield say they've reached a settlement with his former law firm. As we know, Satterfield died in 2018 in what was described as a trip and fall accident at the Murdoch home. A settlement agreement stipulated $2.7 million for the Satterfield family, but they never saw that money. Instead, the money went to an account Murdoch created and owned for his own use. This is all according to the affidavits in the filings. The Satterfields and the law firm have apparently reconciled their differences. Attorney Eric Bland, who represents the Satterfield estate. What does that mean, reconciled? That means they've settled. 1 week ago, South Carolina Circuit Judge Clifton Newman denied Alex Murdoch's bond. And when he denied bond, Newman ordered Murdoch's defense team, made up of two of the most expensive attorneys in the state, to set up a psychiatric evaluation for their client. The psychiatric evaluation is now complete, but it's unclear who conducted the evaluation and obviously what those results are. They're going to remain sealed. All parties are now waiting for Newman to review the evaluation and recommend further action. If Newman accepts the results of the evaluation, the court could schedule another bond hearing for Murdoch, although it's not clear right now what and when that would be. Now, depending on the results of the evaluation, the court could transfer Murdoch to a psychiatric facility for further observation, or no action will be necessary. Now, this is not uncommon when somebody basically has a fall from grace. I'm sure the psychiatrist or psychologist that spoke with Mr. Murdoch for this evaluation will probably say that he's got a little bit of anxiety because of some stress, probably a little depressed given his situation. But the attorneys, remember, the attorneys did not raise competency. It was the court that wanted to see, basically, is this guy stable? Is he going to do something stupid? I mean, he already had somebody to try and kill him. That's pretty stupid. So I think the court just wants to be safe. I still think Alex Murdoch is not going to be leaving the jail cell. And if it was a high bond that was able to be posted, well, he's going to have some explaining to do where that money came from. It's always about the money, ladies and gentlemen. Next, Alec Baldwin, right? Remember, I got a lot of heat the other day when I said, wow, I think Mr. Alec Baldwin should probably get a lawyer, a criminal defense lawyer. Turns out somebody may have been correct. And as we film this video, we're literally getting word that Alec Baldwin is retiring from acting. I don't think this is the way that he wanted to go out. Well, there's new information. Well, the gun that was used by Alec Baldwin on the set of the movie Rust that killed the director and of photography, Helena Hutchins, was reportedly used for target practice by crew members that same morning. Allegedly, someone with knowledge of the set said that several crew members had taken guns from the set that morning to shoot at cans with live ammunition. Assistant director David Halls picked up one of the three prop guns that had been set up by the armorer, Hannah Gutierrez, and yelled, "Cold gun," meaning it did not contain live rounds. This information was obtained from the search warrants. Now, the search warrant also states that Baldwin was aiming the weapon at the camera during rehearsal when he fired, striking Hutchinson and Souza. Now, it was previously reported that the gun may have been used at a social gathering for target practice, but no timeline was provided at that time of that affidavit being written. That reporting also indicated that live and blank rounds were stored in the same place. Not a good idea. In an interview with Steve Wolf, who has been working in film props for several decades, laid out exactly what he thinks went wrong on the New Mexico set. Steve says the lead armor, Hannah Reed, was not experienced enough to handle the job. That's his opinion. He also says low-budget flicks, which Rust appears to be, do a lot of corner cost cutting, like not waiting on actual prop guns or opting for live ammo or not taking the extra steps to thoroughly check weapons before they're used. Lastly, he addressed the burning question, should Baldwin take responsibility for this deadly incident? Steve Wolf says yes, he should take some blame to a certain extent. He acknowledges Alec Baldwin was just an actor in the scene, but adds, if a real gun is in your hands, it's on you to know how to use it and handle it safely and properly. We talked about that last night. We've talked about it in previous shows. That's one of the reasons why I think Alec Baldwin needs to get counsel. Additionally, the fact that, well, he owns the company that was producing the film and he's responsible for everything that takes place on that set. Clearly, going to be lots of money changing hands. So Ian Hudson, a New Mexico-based principal cast member who plays an outlaw in the film, is speaking out about the last scene in the movie Rust. The scene involved a shootout where he was killed, and he says he was terrified that there were 20 pistols and two rifles that were unloading blanks, and the only protection against a mishap was some sort of shield around the camera. Hudson describes what he says was something like a 3x2-foot shield, with the only part exposed being the lens. He was standing apparently some 6 feet in front of the camera and wondered why there was a need to protect the camera as he stood there exposed. Hudson adds that there were people standing behind the camera, something gun experts say should not happen. Well, if it was actually blanks, you could do that, and you're standing away 6 feet away. Yes, a blank could kill you if it was put up, you know, close enough to, for example, your head. But clearly, it's the live rounds that are going to get you. I think this guy's a little overreacting to the situation. I'm sure he was scared. But if everything was done properly, it's blanks. He shouldn't have been that concerned. But Hudson said he felt the scene was life-threatening because real weapons were being pointed at him and blanks discharge, creating a rush of air that struck him multiple times. He also said he was hit by small pieces of cardboard. Hudson says that he didn't complain because, well, he was new in the business and felt he would be viewed as a trouble if he voiced concern. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a Western. It's a cowboy. You probably read the script. If you didn't think you wanted to be around real guns, you maybe not shouldn't have wanted to have been there at all. Now, regarding the gun, Hudson says the other more experienced actors checked their weapons two or three times after they received them from the armorer. He said that it didn't matter whether they were told the gun was cold or hot, but apparently Baldwin did not check the weapon. He relied on the assistant director, who assured him the gun was cold. Another person who was on the set, Serge Savotny, who served as the electrician on the film, took to his Facebook account the following day to share a photo of Hutchinson before her death. Savotny returned to Facebook on Sunday to reveal that he held Hutchins in his arms after she had been shot. He went on to state that Hutchins' death was the result of negligence and unprofessionalism. Savotny went on further to say, to save a dime, sometimes you hire people who are not fully qualified for the complicated and dangerous job, and you risk the lives of other people who are close and your lives as well. Kind of like when people hire a cheap attorney with no experience. You get what you pay for. I understand that you always fight for the budget, but you cannot allow this to happen. According to Mr. Savotnoy, there should always be at least one professional in each department who knows the job. It's an absolute must to avoid such a tragedy like the tragedy of Helena. He ended with, "Dear producers, by hiring professionals, you are buying peace of mind for yourself and the people around you. Yes, it is true that the professionals can cost a little bit more and sometimes can be a little bit more demanding, but it's worth it. No saved penny is worth the life of the person." All right. Now, Helena Hutchins' family is almost certainly gearing up for a wrongful death lawsuit, but apparently the insurance policy that covered the production is limited to $6 million. Now, according to the certificate of insurance written by Front Row Insurance Brokers, general liability coverage is limited to $1 million per occurrence, and there is also a commercial umbrella policy, which is a supplement to the general liability coverage for an additional $5 million. This sounds like it could be a lot of money, but it could be woefully inadequate. 42-year-old Hutchins was a rising star with decades of earnings ahead of her. She was also a mother and a wife, which allows her son and husband to collect for loss of consortium affection. And remember, director Joel Souza was also shot and wounded, and he would have a personal injury claim. The total the insurance company would pay for both Hutchins and Souza is limited to the $6 million. There's also discussion of punitive damages. In New Mexico, if there's proof of recklessness or wanton willful misconduct, a jury could award punitive damages, and those are three times whatever damages that you would receive. You take them out and you times it by three as punishment. Now, typically, there are numerous requirements that insurance companies impose, and violations of those requirements could allow the company to deny coverage. For an instance, given that this was a policy to cover a Western with various gun scenes, there may be an exclusion if there was live ammo on the set. Now, Hutchins' family and Souza are certainly going to sue individuals and the production company, and those defendants would be independently responsible if a jury found them liable. But the insurance is the backstop in case none of the defendants have significant assets. Let's just take a moment here to say what this really means. What this really means is there's $6 million. The insurance company is going to probably provide coverage, but I guarantee you there are people at that insurance company. They have retained attorneys, and they're looking to see if there's any out for coverage, because that's what insurance companies do. They don't like to pay, and so they will more than likely provide coverage or representation with reservation of rights, which basically means that if we can get out of defending Alec Baldwin or his company, that they'll do so that they don't have to pay. And $6 million, yeah, it's not going to be a lot of money as it relates to both these individuals. Obviously, Hutchins, who's deceased. Normally, there are damages capped for non-economic, for suffering, things like that. But for the economic damages, the insurance company is going to argue that it's completely speculative. Every one of her next movies would have been a complete bust, and basically, you know, she wouldn't have had a big future ahead of her. Damages are always speculative in that regard, but we'll see. There's probably $6 million. If the insurance company covers it, they'll want to settle, and they'll probably divide the money up equally, that's for sure. Gloria Allred is already representing somebody in the case, so I'm sure she'll want a piece of that $6 million plus anything else that she can get from maybe Alec Baldwin individually. You never know. It's always about the money. Authorities are still investigating the incident, but criminal charges have not been ruled out. Santa Fe County District Attorney Mary Carmack Altweiss said that criminal charges could still happen. Carmack Altweiss added the word prop gun shouldn't be used to describe the weapon used on the set, as it was a, quote, her words, legit gun, an antique era appropriate gun. However, it will likely take weeks, maybe months, before and if authorities decide to press charges. A little surprising they would take that long, given what we know, what the police probably know that we don't know, but they're going to take their time. Why? Well, let's face it. It's a high-profile individual, Alec Baldwin. They're going to make sure they dot their I's, cross their T's before they do anything. All right, next on the docket, Kyle Rittenhouse. Remember that guy? Wow. In August of 2020, Rittenhouse was then 17, and he had an AR-15 style rifle, and allegedly was involved in a shooting, and it involved people protesting the police shooting of Jacob Blake. Now, Rittenhouse claimed that while at the protest, he was hit in the head and neck with a baseball bat and a skateboard. Now, while medics reportedly observed superficial scratches on his arms, they did not see any bruising or cuts. The following month, Rittenhouse's friend, Dominic Black, 19, was arrested for buying the AR-15 style rifle Rittenhouse used in the deadly shooting. Black allegedly used Rittenhouse money to make the purchase in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, but the weapon was registered to Black's name. Black allegedly asked Rittenhouse to join him in protecting a car source business during the protest. However, reports indicate that the owner of the car source never asked the pair to guard the business. And after the shooting, Black allegedly drove Rittenhouse back to Anatok, Illinois, where he was arrested a day later. A Wisconsin judge ruled on Monday that the three protesters Kyle Rittenhouse allegedly shot last year cannot be called victims. The Kenosha County Circuit Judge Bruce Schroeder also denied Assistant District Attorney Thomas Binger's request to bar the defense from describing the two slain men, Joseph Rosenbaum, 36, and Anthony Huber, 26, and Gage Grosskreutz, who was wounded, as looters, rioters, or arsonists. Binger, the district attorney, claimed that unless evidence shows that these three men were involved in illegal activity and Rittenhouse had witnessed it, those terms are more loaded than victim. Schroeder denied the state's motion, saying, "Let the evidence show what it shows." Rittenhouse, who is free on a $2 million bond, is charged with the intentional homicide, attempted homicide, reckless homicide, reckless endangerment, and possession of a dangerous weapon by a person under the age of 18. Now, Rittenhouse's trial is scheduled to begin on November 1, and the Wisconsin judge and the attorneys for the state and the defense hashed out these limits on use of force testimony and resolved other lingering evidentiary issues. A preview of testimony from an expert for the defense, John Black, heard in court earlier this month, reasoned that Rittenhouse's use of deadly force was reasonable given the violent, lawless context of the protests that night and the threats that Rittenhouse may have perceived. The district attorney, Mr. Binger, resisted the allowance of Black's testimony in part because his expertise deals with the use of force by police, not civilians. Now, Binger also argued earlier this month and on Monday that he does not think any use of force experts are necessary for the trial, saying the jury should be allowed to watch the videos, hear the arguments of the attorneys, hear the testimony of the witnesses, and make their own determinations. Schroeder said he would allow the defense to bring evidence that police told Rittenhouse and other counter-protesters guarding property before the shooting that, quote, "We appreciate you guys, we really do," end quote, and offered them water, which he agreed with the defense could contextualize whether Rittenhouse acted recklessly, adding that it may show officers' approval emboldened him. Binger characterized admitting that evidence turning the trial into one of those actions of the police that night, not Rittenhouse's shooting. Schroeder also decided with Binger on the state's attorney's motion to prevent the defense from referring to Rittenhouse by his first name, saying anyone of age will only be referred to via last names. And that is absolutely normal. I know they do it in juvenile cases, but in court, you need formality. Everyone over the age of 18, at least, maybe even younger, should always be referred to as Mr. or Miss and their last name. The court probably made the correct decision by not allowing the expert to testify that Rittenhouse acted reasonably under the circumstances. I agree with the prosecution. That is an absolute question of fact for the jury to decide. Little surprised by the court's ruling. People have been arguing over the whole issue of victim status for years in court when they refer to somebody as a victim. I've made the argument. Usually it's been shot down, and our courts have ruled people that are the victim in the case, the alleged victim, can be referred as such, even though they haven't actually, the defendant has not actually been found guilty and officially labeling somebody a victim. I don't use the word victim when I am in court. I refer to the alleged victims as the complaining witness, because that's really what they are. But I understand the court's ruling. A little surprised by it that he's going to allow it. But the defense got a break because they can refer to the victims or the complaining witnesses in the case as a bunch of looters, rioters, and arsonists. That's a big win for the defense. Next and finally on the docket, a TikTok star has been arrested. Ali Abulaban, who goes by Jin Kid on the TikTok app, is accused of shooting his newly estranged wife, Anna Abulaban, 28, and Rayburn Cadenas Barone, also 29. The star is based out of San Diego and has about 1 million TikTok followers. Now, according to investigators, Abulaban believed he had caught his wife cheating after installing a secret listening device on their daughter's iPad. They said at 3 p.m. on Thursday, he burst into Anna's apartment on the 35th floor of the Spire San Diego high-rise in the East Village and gunned them both down. At the arraignment on Monday, San Diego Superior Court heard that Ali had a history of domestic violence. His wife had already filed a restraining order against him and was planning on seeking a divorce. She asked him to move out of their apartment on October 18th. He checked into a hotel. But unbeknownst to her, he had secretly kept a key. Prosecutor said 3 days later, he snuck back into the apartment, trashed it, and secretly installed a listening app on their 5-year-old's tablet and left it charging in the bedroom before he snuck back out. The district attorneys alleged that Abulaban was listening via the app when he heard a man's voice talking and giggling. Security cameras show he rushed back to the apartment complex, took the elevator up to the 35th floor. He then ran into the apartment and opened fire. According to the DA, he then shot Barone 3 times at close range, hitting him in the neck, cheek, and back of the head. He then turned the gun on his wife and shot her once in the forehead. The DA said that neighbors heard the gunshots, witnessed the defendant leaving the apartment, and then witnessed Abulaban make a phone call to his mother, admitting that he shot and killed his wife. He then went to pick up his daughter from school, still with the loaded gun in the car. Abulaban told his daughter that he hurt mommy and that, well, he was soon apprehended by the police. It's reported that Ali confessed to the killing and accused his wife of cheating. However, Barone was just a friend, according to the police. Judge Kimberly Legata ordered Abulaban to be jailed without bail, saying that he is a flight risk and probably a danger to society. She was also issued a protective order prohibiting from contacting his daughter, who is staying with a family member. If convicted, Abulaban faces life in prison without parole. And although the DA could push for the death penalty, probably unlikely. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we've said this once, we say it again. People get divorced. It happens all the time. You don't go back and do stuff like Mr. Abulaban did and take innocent lives. And guess what, Mr. Abulaban? Let me tell you this. Even if your wife was having an affair, guess what? Not a defense. Not recognized in the law anywhere anymore. Maybe in Texas you could get away with it, but not anymore, okay? Mr. Abulaban is more than likely going to prison for the rest of his life. Well, frankly, that's where he probably belongs. All right. Let me know in the comments what you think about today's show, the cases we talked about, and we will see you next time on Crime Talk.